So there's been an inaccurate assumption this entire time that if the Strait of Hormuz opens back up, then all the oil will start flowing again. We can just turn the tap back on. The oil and the gas and everything will just start flowing again. It turns out that is not physically true. So you may have become aware that there's flare-offs happening right now in Iran. So at the top of some of the towers above the oil wells, they've been set on fire. So they're basically just burning off the oil. And you might wonder, why? Why are they burning off the oil? And the answer is they can't stop the flow. If they stop the flow, bad things happen. And we lose some percentage of the oil capacity that used to exist in those wells. That's why they're burning the oil right now, because the alternative is far worse. And this is not only true for Iran, it's true for UAE, it's true for Kuwait, it's true for all the Persian Gulf countries that are impacted by this. And you may not know the details of all of this. I certainly didn't, even though I'm a Texan. Doesn't make me, an oil drilling expert automatically, even though we have a lot of oil industry in Texas. But I had known in a general sense that, yeah, you have to keep them flowing, but I didn't know exactly why. Like, what bad things happen if the oil stops flowing? And so, of course, I unleashed my AI agents to do a little bit of research on this point. I learned a few important things that I want to share with you. It's important to understand that a lot of Iran's wells are considered low-pressure wells, which means the oil is not just, spurting out of the ground at high pressure. It's, frankly, it's barely moving. And in some of these wells, they have to actually pump in adjacent drilling, they have to pump in gas, to provide pressure to try to push the oil out of all the fissures and all the different nooks and crannies where the oil is found. And in these low pressure wells, especially, the fluids underground really aren't moving that quickly. And if you let them stop, then you get clogs. I'm going to go over some of that here, but you should know that according to JP Morgan, their oil analyst, Iran has about 2 weeks of maybe additional capacity before things get quite bad. And they're either going to have to start just burning massive amounts of oil or dumping it somewhere or, paying people to take it, Maybe oil prices will go negative again like they did during the COVID years, but for a completely different reason. But see, you got to understand that water and oil are very often found together. I remember when I lived in Wyoming and I was talking to oil experts there, they said, you see all those rigs out there that are pumping oil? Like, yeah, I see them. I said, well, they're mostly pumping water. They're pumping more water than they're pumping oil. And then the oil is separated from the water. I did not even know that, but it turns out that's a very common thing. So there's water. Sometimes there's gas that's in solution in the water or in the oil. And the pressure systems are very delicate. It's a balanced system when it's flowing. And then when it stops flowing, then you start to get water encroachment into the different zones of oil. This in the oil industry, this is called water coning. You may have heard that term, water coning. And then that will actually trap a large amount of oil behind the water where the oil can't get through. And so this means that some of these oil wells can permanently lose their capacity or their flow rate or both. And it's not uncommon if you study this. Again, I had my AI agents look at this. It's not uncommon for oil wells to lose 20 or 30% of their flow rate after some period of stoppage. That stoppage could be as little as 5 days, or it could be a few weeks or a few months, or even in extensive cases, more than a year, like during the war involving Kuwait and Saddam Hussein and Iraq. The Kuwaiti oil wells were shut off for an extended period of time. many of those came back and some of them didn't. Some of them had to be re-drilled at great expense, a process requiring a lot of time. Now, there's another problem, which is that based on changes in the temperature gradients of what's happening underground and the movement of water and oil and other fluids, you can end up with things that are precipitating out of the oil that function like paraffin wax. In fact, they really are paraffin waxes, and what are called asphaltenes, which sounds like asphalt. It's kind of like that, and basically they clog the wellbore tubing and the pores of the surrounding rocks. And so this can cause, of course, massive problems, which will block off, it will clog up fissures so that oil is stranded in pockets that can no longer be reopened, you know, without extensive time and effort and expense. So the thing about Iran is that its oil fields are well known to be mature oil fields, which means they no longer have high pressure. They're low pressure fields. They've been tapped for decades, most of them. And they actually depend on the reinjection of natural gas to maintain pressure in the reservoir. So if you lose that pressure, then you're going to get what's called relative permeability blocking, which is what I mentioned before. You're going to have water and oil blockages with different, you know, precipitates coming out of it that will choke off the flow of the oil. And that is a very real risk for the entire world, because it means that as bad as the Strait of Hormuz closure has been and continues to be, even if there's peace tomorrow, you can't necessarily turn everything back on. So there's some percentage of the oil that will not come back for years, no matter what. And the longer this goes, the worse the problem gets. Now, it's generally known in the oil industry, according to my research, that if shutdowns happen for a few days or a few weeks, that rarely causes permanent problems with capacity. But the more you shut down, the more wells you shut down, the longer you shut them down, then you have a much higher risk of volume degradation. And there is a report out there that my agents found that says that because of the low pressure status of the Iranian oil fields, that some of those can break in as little as 4 days of being shut down. Others would take longer. Typically, it's believed in the oil industry, according to my research, that it takes at least 2 weeks of a full shutdown for this permanent damage to start to happen. And it's common for productivity losses of 20 to 30% when you restart those wells. You're just not producing as much oil. So, and even successfully restarting the well, you know, just because things are flowing doesn't mean that it's oil flowing. You're getting more water and less oil in many cases. So this is obviously a very real risk to the entire world, because we all know that, what, 20 to 25% of the world's oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz, typically. And something like maybe 20, 25% of the natural gas supply and a third of the fertilizers that are seaborne fertilizers, etc. The fertilizer is not such a big deal because it can sit there. The gas is not such a big deal because the gas wells are normally functional again and don't have to be repaired. But the oil wells are the real problem here. And if we reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which could still take months to happen, I mean, there's really no end in sight between the talks between Iran and the United States and however Israel is going to sabotage this thing. There's no telling how long it's going to take to reopen the Strait. But when it does reopen, we're not going to have the oil flow that we once had. Now, remember, this same problem affects Iraq, Kuwait, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, of course, Bahrain, you know, you name it, right? So this isn't just an Iran problem. This is a massive problem across the entire Persian Gulf. And it shows that for every day that the Strait of Hormuz is closed, there is some level of semi-permanent damage being done to the world's economy that does not have a quick recovery. So this is infrastructure damage to the world. It's energy infrastructure damage that cannot be reversed. And very few people understand that. Of course, everybody in the oil industry knows about all of this and much more. But outside oil investors and oil drillers and you know, oil industry technical people, most people don't know that this is how it works. They think you can just turn it all back on and it all starts flowing again. And that's not how it works. So in other words, if this closure continues for a few more months, it's either going to be a shocking environmental, you know, catastrophe for Iran and these other countries to just flare off and just burn everything that comes out of the ground to keep the wells flowing. And that they will do that. And you may recall back in the 1990s, Desert Storm, Saddam Hussein set fire to all the oil wells, or at least some portion of them in Iraq. And it took American companies, I don't know if you recall this, it took American companies, I believe it was more than 1 year just to put out the fires, because those were kind of uncontrolled fires where, you know, you detonate the oil well on purpose to set them on fire and create horrific, you know, conditions for the U.S. invading soldiers. It was an act of war. And that was an environmental catastrophe. And who knows how many, you know, billion gallons of oil got burned up that way. We could have a similar situation happening yet again. And I wonder if it's enough to actually dim the sun. I mean, that would take a lot of oil, obviously. And I don't think that those clouds typically go high enough to stay in the atmosphere for very long. So I'm just guessing, but there could be some climate effects of this that maybe we haven't considered yet. I'll have to dig into that more to find out what those might be. But I guess it all just depends on how long this goes on. But if you think about it, it's crazy that oil is, in a sense, it's compressed sunlight energy in a chemical form. And every gallon of oil or a refined oil product like diesel is extraordinary in terms of how much work it stores. It compresses work into a liquid format that is just astonishing. I was thinking about this. I was moving some dirt a couple weekends ago with a compact track loader. It's got a big 96-inch bucket on the front. I was moving some really heavy waterlogged dirt. Actually, some of it was clay. It's called clay and dirt that was wet, really waterlogged. And I would scoop up this 96-inch bucket. I think it's maybe it's only 84 inches, but it's a wide bucket. Or maybe it's 92 inches. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, I would scoop this massive amount of dirt up, and then I would drive it up a hill. And then I would dump it on top of the hill because I was trying to rework some dirt. And I was thinking to myself, man, if I had to do this by hand, you know, one load would take me like a day, or actually more than a day. And yet, this is probably taking less than 1/20th of a gallon of diesel, you know? It's incredible the amount of work that's it. Like, I can lift dirt a long distance and up vertically, like thousands of pounds at a time on a tracked vehicle, just burning diesel, and it hardly uses any diesel. It's pretty amazing. And if we are burning off this oil, then that is wasted work potential for human civilization. That's work that should have gone into transportation or farming, you know, food production, or the manufacture of lubricants or diesel electric trains or barges or ships or whatever. That's work that's being literally burned up and wasted. And that's going to hurt humanity, because humanity only exists due to the work potential of fossil fuels, for the most part. I know there's wind and solar on the power grid, but in terms of heavy equipment and trucking and transportation and construction and all of this, and ocean freight, trains, you name it, look, it's hydrocarbons. And if we don't have those hydrocarbons, then the world doesn't function at the level that it used to. And then everybody gets a little bit more poor. Everybody loses out on the benefits of that fossil fuel. And so since the Strait of Hormuz is closed because of Trump's war of choice against Iran, we have behind the strait that is to the west of the strait, or the northwest of the strait, we have way too much oil. Way too much. So much they're going to have to just set it on fire. And then to the east of the strait, the rest of the world, we have not enough oil. Extreme scarcity. And people about to go hungry. Think about it. Think about it. We have the resources that we need for abundance and affordable food and affordable transportation. But because of Trump's war on Iran and his refusal to negotiate any realistic peace, we have this incredible imbalance where the solution, the very substance that can solve these problems of food and transportation and energy and industry, etc., is locked up behind the closed strait. Wow. Now, I know you might say, well, Iran closed the strait. Yeah, Iran closed the strait in response to Trump's attack, because closing the strait is the only leverage that Iran really has remaining. Iran is basically saying to Trump and the world, you either stop attacking us or the whole world's going to suffer from lack of energy. And that's where we are right now. So if Trump were to back off and leave, then the strait would obviously reopen. So it's Trump's decision to have the military presence there that is causing the strait to be closed. Remember, the strait has been right there adjacent to Persia for thousands of years, since the beginning of Persia. You know, it's not ours. It's not our strait. Okay, so we really have no business being there. And because we're there, that's why it's closed. So until it's open, the world is going to suffer the consequences of wasted energy, wasted abundance. And, you know, if you think about it, other forms of catastrophes, such as the pollution stemming from all of these flare-offs. And even when it does reopen again, we won't have the same productivity and flow of oil. We're going to lose, I mean, we could easily lose, let me see here. We could lose 6 million barrels a day or something like that in terms of capacity, even after it all reopens. Now, that's more of a high side estimate. Maybe it's only 4 million barrels a day. That counts. That's a big deal. Now, one other point to mention here before I wrap this up is that when the Strait of Hormuz does actually reopen one day, oil is going to be unbelievably cheap for a very short period of time, because countries like Iran will be begging tankers to come take some. Just come get it, and practically free. You know, we'll just give it to you. Just come freaking take it. The problem is there won't be that many tankers available, because, of course, thousands of them are locked up in the Persian Gulf right now. And probably a lot of shipping companies maybe don't want to take the risk because of the instability that they've witnessed. Maybe the insurance companies don't want to insure those vessels. So probably tanker shipping is going to be in short supply even after the strait is reopened. And all the tankers that are there in the Persian Gulf, they're already loaded up for the most part. They're just going to leave. They're not going to take on new loads. They're going to leave, and they've got weeks before they get to a destination. And then they offload there, which also takes maybe a week or at least a few days. And then how are you going to find a crew to go back to the Persian Gulf? Who's going to sign up for that mission? Like, oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, let me get on a ship and maybe get stuck in the middle of a war for months with no food and water. You know, away from my family and kids or whatever the situation is for these people. Who's going to sign up to sail back to the Persian Gulf? And the answer is not many people. Or they'll have to pay much higher wages for that. Would you sign up for that mission? Not on your life. Not a chance. So that's the reality of what we're facing here. Oil transportation is going to be suppressed, even if things reopen. Now, I did say oil prices would be very, very low for a short period of time. But that's at the ports in Iran. Like, oil might be close to zero there at, you know, Karg Island, where Iran is begging companies, just come and take it. That won't last very long. And there are, of course, transportation costs on top of it, and there are refining costs on top of that. So it doesn't mean that you'll get free gas at the gas station. Never. That will never happen. But you could see spot oil prices plummet significantly towards zero for a short period of time. Maybe they could possibly even go negative. But if that happens, it would be a very short duration, maybe only a matter of, you know, 10 days or something, and then prices would start to recover as shipping recovers, etc. But it's going to take what, a year for the international shipping to kind of settle out because of all these disruptions? Maybe a year is even optimistic. I don't think we're going to get back to normal shipping for a long time to come, frankly. So keep all that in mind, folks. This is important stuff, and the energy infrastructure is being seriously damaged on a semi-permanent basis. For every day that this war continues, human civilization suffers even more economically, with food, with abundance, productivity, industrial output, you name it. Every single day is it's a day of damage to the global economy. So let's hope this gets resolved soon for the sake of humanity, and especially those countries that are just barely getting by right now. A lot of countries in Africa and Southeast Asia in particular, some Middle Eastern nations are also suffering quite a lot. So situation is pretty tense, as you know. All right. In the meantime, get prepared for chaos and disruptions in the power grid. Check out our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com. And then also, of course, you can check my videos and interviews at brightvideos.com. And then you can read my articles at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. Well, apparently hundreds of people have been demonetized by YouTube just in the last few days. Major accounts completely shut off. There's also a demonetization wave happening on X. I've seen accounts complaining there. And at the same time, something interesting is happening. One of my friends and associates was offered the ability to publish videos on Facebook, but they have to be short form videos, typically a minute or less. And this person is being paid by Facebook to post like 3 or 4 videos per day. As long as they're short, they can be 30 seconds, they can be 10 seconds, they can be 5 seconds. And they get automatically promoted by Facebook. He told me he posted one video, I don't know, it was like a minute or two, got 40,000 views within a couple of hours without him doing anything. It's just Facebook wants him on there, and Facebook is promoting his videos while other platforms are demonetizing people left and right. So what is happening? Here's what everybody needs to know, especially those of you listening, if you're in the content creator space or if you're an influencer, etc. Here's what's happening. Most of these platforms, well, I would say all of them actually, are preparing for a post-human future. That is, they don't need humans much longer to create the content that they will serve to their users. Remember, what these platforms like YouTube or even, you know, Google or ultimately Facebook or X, what they really want is your attention. Attention is the currency of the future. They want the attention of humans so that they can sell you stuff or, you know, market and promote through advertisers and earn money off the advertising revenue. But they need your attention first in order to do that. And of course, the most lucrative advertising is like luxury brands and high markup, you know, processed food and energy drinks and perfumes and luxury purses and crap like that that really benefits no one. But that's what pays. Oh, and prescription drugs, of course. So They want to gather everybody's attention. They only need humans until they can replace, that is the content creators, they only need content creators for a temporary amount of time until they can replace content creators with AI-rendered avatar videos. Now, I've demonstrated for you some of the AI avatar videos that I'm creating, and they're pretty good, most people tell me. They're quite convincing. You still know that they're AI, which is actually a good thing, but I'm only using local AI rendering technology. It's not the best tech that's available. There's better tech, like Seedance, for example, that's very convincing, and it's practically indistinguishable from real human videos. Here's the thing. YouTube is demonetizing accounts, I believe, because they just don't need to pay humans any longer. They already have enough training material from all the billions of videos that humans have already uploaded showing themselves talking about things or, you know, demonstrating things or whatever. So from all of that, YouTube has clearly decided, well, that's training material. If you look at their user agreement, no doubt they have the right to train their AI on the videos that you have submitted. So they are very close to having everything they need to train all their own avatars for YouTube itself to generate the vast majority of videos that people will watch. And Facebook, the reason Facebook is paying my friend and associate money to create short form videos is because they need his training videos. They need him to do this and demonstrate to the AI at Facebook how this is done, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what are the topics that are chosen, what are the backgrounds in the video, etc. It's all training material. Once they have enough training material, they don't need the humans any longer. Same thing is true on X. You think X needs humans? No. I mean, look at the demonetization. Look at how they're censoring and banning people. X really only exists as a way to hoover up language training materials to train the AI systems, Grok in particular. And after Grok is sufficiently trained, Grok can actually emulate every user that you would want to hear from or engage with. So remember, just like YouTube, soon YouTube won't need humans to create videos at all, which means YouTube and Google won't have to pay any humans. Everything will be AI generated, or almost everything. Well, X is moving in the same direction. It's already overrun with bots, but a lot of those bots are, you know, outside bots, third-party bots that are using the platform. Well, it's an obvious decision inside of X to say, well, why don't we just run our own bots? And then we can have engagement. We can have the attention of the user, the actual human user, who thinks they're interacting with other humans, but it's all AI. But we can still sell ad space, and we can earn revenue from ads without having to pay any monetization to any humans. You see? That's what they're doing. That's what X is doing, in my view. That's what YouTube is doing. That's what Facebook is gearing up to do as well, and other platforms. Not our platforms, of course. We don't monetize our platforms. You know, we don't pay content creators because it just turns into clickbait very quickly, as you may have guessed. But these major platforms are all gearing up for a post-human future. Now, remember, in this, they can serve up to you exactly the kind of person, you know, digital person that you want to hear from. Do you like watching videos from, you know, conservative cowboys? Or, you know, like lesbian white girls with purple hair? Or, I don't know, you like watching, you know, middle-aged black men talk about cooking or whatever the case may be. Or, you know, you speak Spanish, you want to watch Spanish-speaking channel, or you speak Russian. Or, you know, every ethnicity, every language, every demographic, old people, young people, ugly people, cute people, you know, people who have different interests, people who have different looks, they will be able to render up and serve up every single avatar that you could possibly imagine. And then just based on your viewing habits and your clicking habits, they can narrow that down to exactly what you want. It's basically reinforcement learning on a personalized basis to feed to you the kind of avatar that you want to hear from. And once they have that nailed down, then they're going to, of course, promote CIA narratives and, you know, fake information. They're going to influence elections. They're going to try to brainwash you into holding dollars. They're going to tell you that gold is bad. You know, they're going to tell you all these lies that have been part of the mainstream media forever. But since the mainstream media is obsolete, it's going to be this personalized one-on-one AI avatar influence campaign. So again, first they're going to narrow down the kind of avatars that you want to watch, which for me turns out to be mostly like middle age and older white guys talking about geopolitics. Like that's my audience. Like that's who I'm talking to. That's who I'm watching, right? And so they're just going to feed me a bunch of avatars of the kind of people that I tend to watch anyway. And they're going to do the same to you. So if you like to watch, you know, celebrity videos, I mean, probably not you listening to this, but you probably know somebody who just likes to watch celebrity videos. Well, they're going to have celebrity videos. They're going to have, you know, like whatever, you know, OnlyFans chicks or like women with their lips all pumped up and, you know, whatever the young people want to watch today, they're going to be fed that garbage, but it's all going to be completely fake and digital, and it's going to be used for influence. That's what's happening, folks. That's why there's mass demonetization, because they have enough training material. They've seen everything already. They've already ingested all the videos they ever need, or nearly so, you know, the human side of this, that era is coming to an end. Humans won't be needed as content creators for these large globalist-run platforms. They don't need the humans on the content side. They only need humans on the consumption side. They need your human attention. They don't need your human content. See, they want to script the content and then force feed it to you because there's nothing left to watch. And the easiest way for them to do that is to just demonetize everybody to make it so that there's no incentive to post anything. And also they censor people like myself and others, those of us who are actually trying to help free humanity from the prison that's built for your mind. We are censored so that we don't have the reach that would have an impact on the world. That's all by design as well. So that's what's happening, folks. And right now, YouTube is about 80% AI content. But the AI avatars, famously the recent China guy, who has been sort of pirated and copied and cloned all over the place, that's just the beginning of what's coming. You're going to have, frankly, very convincing, indistinguishable AI avatar actors. In fact, I saw this post on social media the other day that apparently there's I saw this post. It said like there's this supposedly this U.S. Army girl who's talking about why Trump is so awesome and the military is so awesome, and you know she's like a pretty girl, pretty young girl that apparently has accounts and has been making all these posts. Turns out she's not even real. She's totally fake, run by, what did they say? Oh, a guy in India, I think is what it was. Yeah, like some dude in India is just using AI to make up this military girl. And he's getting clicks and he's making money off of this because, you know, she's just a good looking girl. And that's what a certain segment of the population just wants to see, I guess. But this guy got busted. Turns out, you know, it wasn't real. You're going to see a lot more of that. In fact, that's going to become the norm. And to see actual live human content on these mainstream platforms is going to become increasingly rare. And so that's why it's important to use alternative platforms. You know, we have Brighteon.com. That's our uncensored video site. Feel free to contribute there if you'd like. Have a channel there. Just know that the links are censored by X, so you can't share them. Brightvideos.com, which is my video site. Of course, I'm always going to give it to you straight as an authentic human, whether you agree or disagree. You know that it's actually me. And even though I also have AI avatars, I tell you about them. And I, in fact, I kind of brag about him a little bit, you know, like, what was that guy's name? The avatar I just created, the 1950s guy who's the investigator. That's a cool guy. That's a cool set, you know, and the voice was great. So I'm actually kind of proud about that one. And he was giving economics lessons and so on. I mean, that's actually a good use of an AI avatar where you know it's not real. We're not trying to trick anybody, you know. We're trying to educate people. And it's a fun way to learn something about economics. But anytime I have AI avatars, I tell you about it. And yeah, we have some videos on brightvideos.com that are AI avatars, and you can see them all quite clearly. None of them are tricking people. But they're covering important topics in a short format. So we do it with integrity, with disclosure. But these other platforms, they're going to do it to trick you and to manipulate you, to influence you. That's the next stage of widespread influence. It's personalized AI virtual avatars giving you the content that they think will influence you the most. And it's going to sweep up a lot of people because it will be very seductive for most people, especially those who can't think for themselves necessarily. So this is why it's critical to tune in to real people, real channels, real voices. And I thank you for tuning in here and supporting my work. And if you want to support us even more, you can shop with us, healthrangerstore.com. And there you'll find, of course, laboratory verified, certified organic herbs and foods and superfoods and ultra clean personal care products, because, you know, I despise fragrance chemicals. I despise fillers or artificial or synthetic anything. I despise GMOs. So everything across the board at our store is ultra, ultra clean. Check out the ingredients. Check out the lab tests. We have our own mass spec lab. We do more testing than anybody else in the world that is a retailer of food and supplements. Nobody's even close. So again, check us out, healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support. And you can follow my work at brightvideos.com. And you can see a couple of the avatar videos there as well. In fact, you know what? I'm going to end this with, should we do Master Fu Koff or should we do the 1950s? I'm going to do the 1950s guy for you. So we'll just end it with that avatar video. I think you'll find it fun.
The thing about so-called universal high income is that it would lead to hyperinflation and currency collapse. Here's the math. 100 million people times $10,000 per month times 12 months equals $12 trillion a year. To put that in context, total federal spending in fiscal year 2024 was roughly $6.75 trillion, and total federal revenue was about $4.9 trillion. So this single program would cost nearly twice the entire existing federal budget, and about 2.5 times all federal tax revenue. It would roughly triple total government spending overnight. It obviously can't be funded by taxation alone, so it would require printing money at a pace that would rapidly devalue the dollar, effectively destroying much of the purchasing power the payments were meant to provide. The recipients would get bigger numbers on their checks, but the prices on the shelves would be rising just as fast or faster. Before long, the people would find themselves right back where they started, impoverished, yet receiving a high income derived entirely from money printing that rapidly erodes the purchasing power of all the dollars they're given. Universal high income, in other words, would actually achieve universal poverty and despair. Basic economics. I'm Frank DeLuccia, reporting for brightvideos.com.
Bright Videos.
Iran's not going to surrender. Iran, Persia, is one of the richest countries on the planet. They have, you know, all the minerals, all the brain power, engineering power. Iran is 80% of food independent. So what we've done is essentially revealed to the world how weak our hand really is. The Iranians are saying this won't just be restricted to the Middle East, you know, that America will suffer the effects directly.
Welcome to part two of my interview with Matt Bracken. And in part one, if you missed it, it's on brightvideos.com. We talked about the imminent the urgency of the situation in the Middle East and how the U.S. Navy is facing just huge challenges. And it's not up to the task that we would expect it to be. But I want to ask you, Matt, about this next thing. And let me tell my producers, I want you to show my screen. I put out this infographic, and I know you've shared a couple of mine. This one's called The Engineered Energy Collapse. And this infographic talks about how the world is on this pillar. Modern civilization is being held up by this pillar of cheap, available, reliable energy. Everything from transportation, industry, jobs, you know, even data centers, you name it. And it appears that this is being dismantled, not just from the war, but also we see dozens of cases seemingly all around the world in the last couple of months of refineries blowing up or being set on fire, or fertilizer plants in Australia burning down or being damaged. I mean, is this just coincidence, Matt, or is something more nefarious going on?
Yeah, much more nefarious. And, you know, that I have to set this up with kind of like going back to the naval war aspects of it. The choke points are now everybody can squeeze a choke point. The Houthis in the Red Sea can squeeze a choke point. So our prosperity, global prosperity, the rising of everybody's standard of living, you know, from China to Vietnam, Bolivia, people are living better now than they ever did in history. I mean, it's a fact. And with a few exceptions that are like, you know, Haiti or places that just socially just can't figure things out. But anywhere where there's social stability, people have benefited in the last 50 years from untrammeled sea communication. If the North Koreans want to trade with the Argentinians, nobody is stopping them. Anywhere to anywhere, from Russia to anywhere, you just have a ship and you go. That is now all being challenged. And energy obviously is the main focus of this, because that's like the blood cells, you know, that are carrying the oxygen. But everything else is being challenged as well. The fertilizer, you know, copper, helium, everything you've named before. So the prosperity that we've known is going to shrink, and we're going to possibly go into a really bad retrograde phase of humanity. Some people think, well, you know, America will be fine because we have everything we need, so we'll be Fortress America, like the risk map. You know, if you have Greenland and Alaska and, you know, South America, you fight over, but let Eurasia fight over Eurasia. If we're going to go to that, then the prosperity that we've known is going to slip backwards very dramatically. And I just going back to that China thing, we used to have gunboats, British and American gunboats, going all the way up the Yangtze and other rivers in China, which would be like the Chinese having gunboats going to Cleveland and St. Louis and dictating the terms of how those cities should run and trade with, you know, the superior power. That stopped a century ago. And we've still got a sea power, Pax Americana, U.S. Navy, you know, allowing free trade around the world. That's all great. But that's now being blown up, because when we attacked Iran, Iran did what they've said they'd always do. They closed the Strait of Hormuz, and their Shia friends in Yemen can threaten the Suez Canal. Then we go and we kick the Panama or Chinese out of Panama, and then Panama retaliates against Panamanian flagged ships in the Pacific. So what we're doing is we're strangling ourselves. Our prosperity is based on, we don't have tourniquets on our body, right? And the parts pumping all the way to the fingers and toes. And now we're getting into a war where it's like, oh, you put a tourniquet on this wrist, I'll put a tourniquet on your leg. How is that going to work out in the long run? It's going to be disastrous. And that's where we're going. Now, the energy obviously is what we're all focused on, but energy and food have to be seen together. You can say that food is a function of energy. Food is directly a function of energy. It takes energy in the form of liquid natural gas to make, like, you know, most fertilizer. So that's going to be removed from the process. And there are going to be poor countries that immediately go into famine. They're all going to point at America as causing it, like this pirate rogue nation. You know, well, can at this point congratulate ourselves for having all the tankers coming to Texas, but the rest of the world is going to point at us and say, you're pirates, you're mafia.
Yeah, that's clearly the way the American empire is operating right now. And Trump seems to be thinking that he doesn't care if he strangles the rest of the world as long as he comes out on top. And I want to bring your attention to a couple of statistics. So right now, roughly with the Strait of Hormuz mostly non-functioning, roughly about 20% of the world's oil supply is offline at the moment. And according to modern economic theory, that will result in at least a 10% global contraction of GDP, and it will thrust maybe 500 million people into extreme poverty and famine. But Iran has said if Trump continues to attack, that it will bomb a pipeline in Saudi Arabia that carries, I think, around 7 million barrels a day, bypassing the Strait of Hormuz, and also that the Houthis, as you mentioned, will constrict access to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And that those actions combined with the Strait of Hormuz would take about 32% or almost one third of the world's oil supply offline, plus, of course, natural gas and the other things that you mentioned. That would cause at least a 16, maybe 20% global contraction in GDP, which is serious depression time. And it could thrust 700 or 800 million people into famine and extreme poverty. Seems like this is where we're headed, and Trump doesn't mind it, whatever it takes.
Yeah, I think that he's out of his mind. So you have to think of him as in terms of somebody who's demon possessed or demented, which means that the generals and staff around him, J.D. Vance, they have to be thinking about the 25th Amendment for the good of America and the world. And I'm even setting aside what's breaking today is that the Iranians are saying this won't just be restricted to the Middle East, that America will suffer the effects directly. And as we have discussed previously, I believe personally that the Metcalf, California attack like 10 years ago was a proof of concept operation. It was this is what my team can do. And if you give me the orders, I can do 20 of these and take out, the power grid in America. But even aside from that, if we go back to war, Iran has said, forgetting attacks directly in continental United States, Iran has said, we'll take out all of the petrochemical and electrical power all the way around Kuwait to Saudi Arabia, everywhere we can reach that's operating American bases. Because by the UN's own laws of war, if you allow a country to use your bases for offensive attacks, in a war of aggression, a war that they caused, then you are a partner in that. So you are a target. UAE, Kuwait, you are a target. If American planes are landing and putting bombs on your airport, then your country becomes a target. Well, it took, let's just say, roughly 50 years to build this oil infrastructure, petrochemical infrastructure, the infrastructure that loads phosphates onto ships, all of this. These things are huge. These are things you can practically see from outer space, right? I mean, you can see these things. This is like
just the mega ship berths for loading the oil and the gas. Yeah.
The berths are out at sea because ships can't even get close to the land. These are mega ports and mega infrastructure. These are things that are like the Great Wall of China you can see from space. And it took 50 years to build them. So when you, in a sterile, isolated way, you say, well, that strike on Qatar took out 15% of its petroleum refineries, and the next round could take out 80%, because that was a warning shot. The 15% was a warning shot.
Yes.
Right? If we take out 80% instead of 15% from Kuwait to Saudi, everywhere in the Persian Gulf, you can't just put a number of months on it like, oh, that will take 20 months to repair. Because the world will go into a depression and we won't have the wherewithal. It took 50 years to build that. That's like saying if somebody blows up the Golden Gate Bridge, we'll have it fixed in 2 months. No, you won't. That bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, it gets hit by a ship. It's still down.
No, right? In particular, the LNG trains in Qatar, owned by Qatar Energy, they have said that the damage to the two trains would take right now 3 to 5 years to repair.
Best case.
If more
everything goes
that's right,
good.
Best case. If they lose, what is it, 12 trains or something like that, we're talking 10 to 15 years if everything works.
But 10, you can't just say two trains is 6 months, so the whole thing will be 3 years. You can't say that because
right, the whole infrastructure.
If you go into a Great Depression, there's no ships going anywhere. Those engineers from Britain and Turkey and every, they're not flying in to fix that stuff.
There's
no economy left to pay them.
And then there's no air conditioning for the hotels to stay.
Right. Back to living in tents.
Right.
And everybody talks about the desal plants, but the desal plants, which are the easiest target, the desal plants are hugely energy intensive. So if the grid goes down in these countries, you might as well hit the desal plants, because with no power, the desal plants don't make water. You have millions of people living in what's the equivalent of a fish aquarium, right? It's very pretty. The fish swim around and it's like luxury fish aquarium. They got the coolest fake plants and fake little pirate treasure chest, right? And bubbles. But you pull the plug on that aquarium, the fish are all dead. And that's the Gulf countries. If you pull the plug on the Gulf countries, those millions of expats and locals and Indian workers and Filipino nurses, they can't live there. And they won't even be able to get enough aircraft in, assuming that the war is over and the airport is open. You won't be able to fly that many people out on airplanes. They will die in the summer before they can be flown out. It will be a fish aquarium catastrophe. Where all of a sudden the pH and the temperature of the fish aquarium goes off, you're not going around with a net and scooping them up. They're all just floating dead.
Yeah, and the weather's about to get really freaking hot also in that region of the world. But
you can't live there.
I want to direct you back though to the original question: who is sabotaging the refineries in India, in Australia, in Myanmar? Or wherever, because we keep seeing these explosions or fires. We know the ones in Russia are being hit by Ukrainian drones, from America, whatever. But what about the other countries? Like, what is going on?
You can't discount that there are sabotage teams. Like, there is a guy gets a coded message. Juan has a long mustache. Okay, that means I got to go blow up my refinery. You can't discount that. But I think that there are a lot of people, any work infrastructure job where you have 1,000 employees, say, a chemical plant, a refinery, you're going to have, 10% that are like green energy leaning people that believe that the world, even working at a chemical plant, right? And they've all been trained how to sabotage the plant, because the first week that they get the job, and then constantly, every 1 hour out of every 20 that they work there is safety, right? Don't do this or the whole plant can explode.
Right.
These guys with the badges that are not like just janitors, these are like pretty intelligent people that are working control rooms. 10% of their job is safety briefings on, we've just been alerted to what happened over here, and we're going to now spend the whole day on a safety stand down. Don't overdo this. The whole plant could burn up. So they know how to do it. So it only takes one guy. I mean, there was like a nuclear power plant in France. It's like 10 years ago. And it's like a disaffected Muslim immigrant. You can't say, well, no, we're not hiring any Muslims at our chemical plant in Texas. Imagine that would be like, oh, ACLU's all over your ass. So you've got, the guy from Pakistan or Morocco, and now he's just fed up watching Gaza. He's just fed up. He's watching Lebanon, and he's done with it. And he knows exactly how to set that thing on fire.
So what you're saying, there could be climate activists or disaffected employees who have philosophical loyalties to these other countries, like you mentioned.
Absolutely.
Either one of those cases could be happening.
And you have just the arsonist impetus of, I want to see it burn. And since everything is burning, you have these contagions in high schools where people think that they're all having a disease meltdown or a suicide wave. you have a psychological contagion. So people that are working at a refinery and see three or four refinery fires say, I hate my job too. And you know what? I think that the world's coming to an end anyway. Well, so I want to see, I'd love to see my refinery burn.
We did see that one employee burn up that warehouse in California on video and say all they had to do was pay us a living wage. Remember that? It was toilet paper and paper towels. 1 million square feet up in flames. Boom, because highly flammable.
And it doesn't have to be an inside job. These things are very easy to do from outside. You know, the basic Shahed drone, the, you know, 12-foot wingspan with a lawnmower engine, essentially, that can carry a 50-pound explosive charge. I know tons of people that make their own hot rods and off-road dune buggies and, you know, Everglades airboats. These are guys that make the whole thing in their garage, right? I mean, they make it all. Airplanes, no problem.
So you're saying there could be DIY approaches here.
You can make the Shahed drone genie is out of the bottle. It's not like making a Tomahawk missile. To make something that can go 200 miles with a 50-pound payload is something that a million Americans could do. I mean, I know people that make their own boats and hot rods that could easily, if you hand them the plan's online. Two fiberglass shells, you know, motor in the back, and to launch, you see the Iranian launcher where it's like in a container, like a 40 or a 53 foot container, and there's like five of them, so it tilts up to 45 degrees, but each one has a little rocket assist to like kick it out to propeller speed.
Yeah,
but you don't need that, and Iran. Does this too, just to give them more flexibility and more potential to continue working even after we've taken out all of their big launchers. If you put that drone on a pickup truck and you get it up to 70 miles an hour on a straight road, you don't need a rocket.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the propeller is already turning. You just go to 70 miles an hour and then cut it loose and off it flies to the refinery. I'm not saying that's already happened in America, but that genie's out of the bottle. And something Michael Yon covered when, you know, and many others, Muckraker and others, Anthony Rubin, at the border, you know, it's not just like poor Congolese and poor Guatemalans. You see like, you know, 10 guys that are obviously Hezbollah. They're coming through. They're like a squad just coming through the Texas or Arizona border, or the Chinese in San Diego. They got perfect boots. They're obviously military. They're like majors to sergeants coming through and getting on a bus.
And you warned about this for many years, that there were terror cells or groups that were being planted in the U.S. and also staging weapons. We've seen many reports, for example, of interdicted supplies being shipped in, like, you know, night vision or full auto drop-in triggers and sears for ARs or AKs, etc. So talk to us about that. What do you think is prepositioned?
And it's not even what they can smuggle in. It's not even important. What they're smuggling in is right here. They're smuggling in Chinese SEALs and Chinese Green Berets, and Chinese spooks. So they're setting up safe houses and they're setting up training areas. And they're disciplined. They're not like your lone wolf, you know, going off Boston Marathon bombing. We're talking about people that are under military discipline. Their orders are go to America and await orders. And when you get the order, this is what you'll do. You know, you may be told to assassinate somebody, or you may be told to take out a power transformer. I just saw, I forget what country it was in, but they said there was like 30 tons of oil. Can you imagine in a transformer?
I saw that. There's a massive explosion.
Like 30 tons of oil in a transformer. And you just shoot it with a bullet, one at the top and one at the bottom.
Oh, man.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Our whole global prosperity or national prosperity, either way, zoom in or zoom out, is based on a high trust model. You know, in Japan, you can leave your bicycle without a lock. Kids get on the subway in Japan with their school uniform and the, you know, the uniform, the school logo, and any adult will make sure they get to that school. That's a high trust society.
Uh-huh.
So our whole global infrastructure is a high trust society. Nobody's going to submarine your freighter. You know, we don't like North Korea and we don't like this country, but if North Korea wants to send a freighter, we're going to let them do it. That's a high trust world. And we ended that. I'm not saying it's the first, but it was definitely the most splashy. We blew up the American Navy blew up the Nord Stream pipeline.
Clearly. Okay.
And I could do a whole show proving that. But the U.S. Navy blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, and not like with a frogman, you know, right at that moment, but we did it. And that was because we didn't want Russian cheap LNG fueling a German economy where Germany was essentially the manifold. It wasn't just going to Germany, but Germany is where it input into Europe, and then it goes out to the rest of Europe. We did not want Europe and Russia aligning economically. So yeah. We blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. We did it. So we threw our own allies under the bus, NATO allies. We sabotaged their economies because we'd rather have them suffer than be cozy with Russia economically. And now all bets are off. We're going to start seeing tankers explode at sea.
That's where this is going. I'm really glad you brought up Nord Stream, because that was an act of economic terrorism carried out by the United States military against civilian infrastructure. And I believe the Navy planted those explosives during, what was it, Balt Ops 22?
Sure.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's right. They planted them.
Right.
And then they can just set them off later.
Exactly. So we know that there was foreplanning of this. We know Joe Biden bragged about it being blown up.
Right.
Victoria Nuland was celebrating it, et cetera. I mean,
that's right.
100%.
Applebaum and Sikorsky, her husband, Applebaum, CIA, Atlantic, you know, reporter, her husband, Sikorsky, Polish radical, Russia hater. Yeah, we blew up the Nord Stream. So it's like, sorry, Europe, we'd rather see you poor than prosperous, but aligned with Russia.
But is there an element of what's happening in the Middle East now where Trump wants Iran to blow up the Persian Gulf infrastructure for the same reason, but completely lacking any foresight about the domino effect?
He may be sold that, like he was sold that the Iranians will rise up and overthrow the regime in 3 or 4 days, right? Admiral Bob Hardwood said, the former SEAL, he said before February 28th, if we attack Iran, they will fall in a matter of hours, not days, hours.
Right.
Hours. Precision strikes, you know, this is a country that endured an 8-year war where we used poison gas. We gave poison gas to, and they didn't surrender. Iran's not going to surrender. So Iran's calculation at this point is, if we go through another hard time, and I'm not saying this is like a plebiscite, like we're going to ask all the Iranians, are you ready for martyrdom? Okay. But the shot callers in Iran, their thinking is, even if we suffer greatly, but we take out the whole West, right? The whole West collapses, Great Depression. We have everything we need in Persia. Persia is one of the richest countries on the planet in terms of self-sufficiency. They have, you know, all the minerals, all the brain power, engineering power. They're like 80%. Food independent, which is a record. Ireland is 80% food dependent. Ireland imports
so
80% of the food they eat.
Right.
Iran only and this is one of kickback effects, boomerang effects of sanctions, like putting them on Rhodesia or South Africa or Russia. It forces them to develop their own industry, right? It's no longer just let's buy it cheap from China. We can't trade with Russia, so Russia has to build their own drone factory, or Rhodesia has to make their own ammunition now. So Iran is 80% of food independent. Obviously, when we talk about taking out the Iranian power grid, it's almost a joke because it's so distributed. It's not like there's 5 giant nuclear plants running the country. Something like 90% of Iranian homes have gas piped in. And it's not piped in from a million miles away. It's like piped in from, you know, the next county, right, where it comes out of the ground. So Iran is not going to be brought to its knees because we put a blockade on the Strait of Hormuz. That's like, yeah, that's nothing to them.
Exactly, Matt. And I want to mention, too, I love the fact that you're a fan of maps. So is Michael Yon. So am I. Globes and maps. And you can't argue with geography.
You can't.
When you look at the Strait of Hormuz and you look at Iran, come on. You need to negotiate. That's the only way, because you're never going to have U.S. troops controlling both the north and the south side of that strait with Persia sitting right there for thousands
of
years. You know?
The big island at the top of the Strait of Hormuz called Keshem Island, just that island is bigger than Okinawa, which took 5 Marine and Army divisions, 3 months, okay? And the little island that's in the other part of the toll booth called Larak Island, that's bigger than Iwo Jima.
Okay. Right.
So
right.
We're going to send a few thousand Marines in to do what it took divisions of Army and Marines to do. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and in World War II, the Japanese didn't have drones either.
They didn't have drones.
Right.
Right. They had kamikazes, which was like an early, you know, guided cruise missile,
right,
but nothing like swarms of drones.
Right.
So what we've done is essentially revealed to the world how weak our hand really is. We revealed it to the world. I recommend highly. I've watched this movie probably 5 times in my life. And it was written by a Navy chief who was not actually in the Asiatic Fleet. So it was written by a guy that wrote one book, and it won a Pulitzer Prize, I believe, and the movie won Academy Awards with Steve McQueen, The Sand Pebbles. But it's about the Asiatic Fleet in China. And this Navy chief was listening to all these stories of the old guys who were in the Asiatic Fleet. And he wrote this book called The Sand Pebbles. But this is when America and Britain patrolled deep into China. And it was like, well, what? Of course, we're the American Navy. We got cannons. They don't. We go to their town. We tell them what the deal is. Sign here or else. We'll put one through your palace, right? A 5-inch shell through your palace. That's 100 years ago we got kicked out of China. And the Chinese love that movie. They think that movie's great. You know, it's like, this is Sun Yat-sen. This is the rise of China, the end of the century of humiliation. You know, we're chasing the American Navy out. So it's a great film. But this is what the world is seeing now. We used to dominate the Persian Gulf. We had an aircraft. The Eisenhower was in the Persian Gulf 3 years ago in 2023. Now we don't have a single anything in the Persian Gulf.
Well, and it seems like the era of humiliation is now going to happen to the American Empire.
Yes. And that 1,000-kilometer line around, you know, that's out from Iranian territory, if you extend that all the way around Asia, Japan's got to read the tea leaves.
Yeah.
Australia's going into an energy emergency. They can't plant this year. They've got nothing for their tractors. It's like an energy lockdown in Australia. So imagine what the phone calls that are coming from our allies, Philippines, Japan, Korea, that they're saying, you've got to stop this.
Yeah, at a high level.
It might be okay in America, but it's terrible here.
The head of the Kuomintang in Taiwan, a woman, just met with President Xi in China talking about peaceful unification. And of course, that's the party in Taiwan that supports that. The DPP does not. But, you know, the DPP is the party that shut down all the nuclear power plants and has left Taiwan with no energy options because they're depending on the West. The West can't protect them and can't deliver energy. They've got no gas. Their power grid's about to shut down in Taiwan.
Yeah, look at Australia. Australia, I think, is the number 2 producer of uranium in the world. I think Canada's number 1. Maybe it might be like Russia, Canada, Australia. But Australia, pound for pound, is a uranium super producer.
Yeah.
They don't even have a single nuclear power plant. They went so far on the green on the green climate stuff that they had 10 or 12 refineries. They closed all but 2 because they're like looking at it like bean counters, saying, well, it would be more cost effective and cleaner for our environment if we just buy gasoline from other places. We'll just buy diesel and gasoline.
Right.
But Australia is an island, okay? So they could have been, and maybe sometime in the future, they could have been, like France, a nuclear power complete. We're just going to cut off everything. We'll have all electric vehicles. We'll have a nuclear power plant, you know, every 100 miles, because we got all the uranium in the world, right? And we got enough engineers. We're just make new nuclear plants. Everybody plugs in and screw the world. Instead, they're screwed because they reduced down to 2 refineries. One of them just burned, you know, one of those mystery fires just happened in Australia. And again, this is the beach in Thailand, and people on the beach are starting to notice, what's that white thing on the horizon? It looks kind of unusual, you know?
Yeah,
the foam on the top of the wave.
Well, and Australia is especially self-screwed here because, you know, you said it's an island, but it's a massive, you know, it's a continent, but it's a massive, the road distances in Australia are huge. And without diesel, that country shuts down.
Right.
The transportation is huge.
It's the size of the lower 48. I think it's an island. They call it a continent.
But, yeah, you know, but either way, it's huge.
It's huge. But they could have a nuclear power plant, you know, every 500 miles. And they could have, you know, just plug your Chinese-made EV in. But they're not. Because they went on this, we're just going to have nice, clean cars and buy our gasoline from Indonesia or somewhere.
And they spent their money building, you know, vaccine quarantine camps instead of energy infrastructure.
Right. And the punishment, they're going to be punished for their foolishness.
But
this comes back to the whole, you know, Admiral Alfred Thayer Mahan sea power, right? The West, Britain, and then America will dominate the world by having a fantastic Navy. And we'll be able to go wherever we need to go and, you know, and get the deals we need to make and protect the sea lanes of communication. And mainly, we just don't want Russia and Germany to ever get together. And we don't want Russia and China to ever get together. So that Russia and Germany thing we definitely just saw, which was like, you know, another modern iteration was the Nord Stream sabotage. But now Russia and China are together. And so is Iran. And Iran, I mean, so the blockade, the Strait of Hormuz to Iran, they don't care. Yeah, oh, they're not collecting dollars. Okay, they're not collecting dollars. Iran feeds itself. It's in a drought, but they still aren't like going thirsty. It's not like they're on desal water.
They can last longer than the West.
Way longer.
Yeah.
Way longer.
No question.
And they have straight across the Caspian is Russia. On the Caspian is Kazakhstan, which is now flipping from the West to China and Russia because they can see the tea leaves.
Yep.
So Iran is part of now the World Island Heartland, the Mackinder thing, which is very hard to break that up because a submarine can't do it. You know, we can't torpedo. If we want to like start attacking Chinese trains, then you're just saying World War III with China. So, yeah, under the old, you know, Mahan sea power, our allies, look at our key allies. Ireland was neutral, but it's, you know, for family reasons, Ireland's kind of an ally. The UK, obviously, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Korea, which is an island because it's only attached to North Korea, Taiwan. These countries immediately go into a hard depression,
yes.
Much worse than Iran.
Yes.
Much worse. And they're westernized. They have a high standard of living. They're not like in a martyrdom self-sacrifice culture.
You know, it seems like they're only weeks away from hardship really starting to hit hard.
And lockdowns. And it'll be a lot like COVID. It'll be you can't leave your house because you can't get in your car. You're going to get 10 liters of fuel a week. And only, you know, I remember the 70s was like odd and even days. If your license plate ends in even number, you know, but that was small compared to what's coming. And because this time it's going to affect planting around the world. And you know, the crop isn't going to go in, or the crop that goes in is going to be harvested at 50%. We need 90 or 100% to feed this planet. We've got a just-in-time planet that runs that only runs wide open. We have a just-in-time planet, and you can't just say, "Well, we're going to take away a third of the fertilizer,"
even though that's exactly what's happening. So
right.
Yeah, the ramifications.
So the yields are going to be down, and now it's going to, and I call it the Great Energy World War, with food as a function of energy. You know, food and energy are like tied together. So countries are now going to say, we can't export our rice. We're going to pass a law that the rice of Thailand stays in Thailand.
That's what's coming next.
And that means countries like Pakistan, it's like, what do you mean we can't buy any rice?
Yeah. China and Russia have already said we're not going to export any refined fuels.
Right.
Right. And what's next is exactly like you said, they're going to ban exporting food. And then,
so what happens to countries like Egypt, where just like, you know, there are those fuel tankers are like on a conveyor belt. You know, if you zoomed out into space, you'd see like a tanker every 2 days apart, you know, 12 miles an hour going across the oceans. You stop all that. Well, you're also stopping the rice and the wheat ship.
That's right.
But the rice and the wheat ship, this is what Michael Yan talks about, flash the bang. You know, you see the cannon flash, and you know, you hear the bang speed of sound later. Maybe the cannonball is supersonic or not. So the actual strike could be somewhere in there. So we're in that flash the bang period where we're still eating the 2025 harvest.
Right.
But the 2026 harvest, if it comes out 50%, we're talking about 2027, countries like Egypt in full revolt because they can't feed their population.
That's right.
For any money. And they're going to say, we were your ally. Where is the Ethiopia Somalia Relief Fund now for Egypt or Pakistan?
And then
hundreds of millions of people starving.
Then Egypt's going to take the Suez in a hard way and say, you bring us rice if you want your ship to pass through
and
the Suez.
And they won't pass. The canals will be, the Suez and the Panama Canal are the low-hanging fruit of all of this.
Absolutely.
The Gatun Lake, when they built the Panama Canal, they built Gatun Lake. People don't understand. I don't blame them. I mean, it's not that interesting. It is to me or you. But they had to build this artificial lake and let, you know, a decade of rain fill it up before the Panama Canal would work. If you blow up a levee on the Gatun Lake and drop the water level down 20 feet, it'll take a decade to refill. You know, so the Panama Canal can be taken out. So we're in a battle now where it's like, you know, oh, you just put a, you know, you put the tourniquet on my friend's ankle, so I'm going to put a tourniquet on your arm, and we're all going to suffer. It's like the you know, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. We're all blind and toothless. We're in a race to the bottom now. We need a world that has unrestricted, unfettered sea trade to maintain what we've built. If we go into our, you know, I'm going into my cave, and you know that caveman's going into his cave. There's no more trade. We're all going back like a century in standard of living.
And importantly, under that configuration that you just described, the world cannot support 8 billion people living.
No.
Maybe 4 billion.
I saw like just one of these random videos that popped up on X, some girl in a car, you know, some lady in a car, and she was comparing what's going on to The Big Short. The elites, they know what's happening. She said it's a 99-year fiat currency collapse cycle. You can see it coming, right? You're experts. They've got no illusions. So you have to engineer, obviously, a big war to be force majeure, the whole globe, a big war. But the elites that have run this into the ground, they can position themselves before the big crash. You know, they've got 10 years worth of diesel in their mansion in Patagonia, Gulfstream jets, mega yachts. And they think that when it all comes, you know, when it's all done, they can fly back and, you know, whatever's left out of the ashes, they'll be on top again. You know, that's the plan. But so they're kind of like shorting the world. Now we're at the stage where we're instead of the slow decline, we're going to go right into a war, crash the thing into the mountain. We'll be all right because we're in our house in New Zealand or Patagonia, right? And we got our mega yachts and our jets. And when it's all the dust settles, we'll just come back and be on top again. You know, that's how it's worked in the past. Yep. I don't know if it'll work this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, you know? good point. I'm not sure it will either, but clearly we're going to be facing years of suffering and destitution and famine. That's all engineered.
Oh, no doubt. And you know, I'm a fan of Catherine Austin Fitz as Michael Yon. She has her 12 points of like digital control, like all of these. It's like a wish I had the graphic ready, but all of the digital control points, the digital control grid is being installed. That's one way it may turn out. You know, there's a global noble class. We're all peasants. We're all digitally controlled. Central bank digital currency, mark of the beast. But that's one way it may. That's maybe how the elites think it will go if the plan works. But we could be in for like a 30 years world or a new dark age.
Right.
You know, when I always use this thing, the elevator analogy, you know, you're on the 80th floor. You can't just say, oh, wow, we're going to crash. Let's get off at 1870. That was a pretty good decade. Let's get off at 1870. No, you can't. 1870 had a whole infrastructure built. You know, you could order a cast iron kitchen wood-fired stove from Chicago and get it sent to, you know, North Dakota on a train, right, and have a nice wood-fired, that's gone. You know, the cast iron tractor that you, behind your horse team, that's gone. So you can't get off at 1780 or 1885, or you can't, if we crash, it might be all the way to the floor. Like, you know, cannibalism, really bad, a really bad level where, you know, the elevator, you can't just get off the elevator at your favorite century.
Uh-huh. Right. You know? Right. Right. And especially since everything is so over leveraged right now, it seems like the crash will be more
devastating. That's the speed. Right. That's the speed. If there were famines in history, but where, you know, 80% of the people lived on the land and never moved 10 miles from their house, and there were still famines. But what we have now, the speed of leverage, when you pull out the diesel fuel and the fertilizer and all the, you know, the Monsanto's Franken seeds, farmers, I'm sure there are some, but modern agriculture, people buy seeds just like they buy fertilizer.
Yeah.
They don't even know how to take some of their corn and hold it back to grow next year's corn.
That's right.
They are in a contract with Monsanto, and the seed is delivered just like the fertilizer. Mm-hmm. When that stops happening, we're not going to like lose 20% of our agriculture. We're going to lose like 80% of our agriculture.
Exactly.
Suddenly.
Matt, you're nailing it as usual. I want to encourage people.
I'm sorry. My wife calls me like, you know, Mr. Worst Case Scenario. I don't know.
No, I think you're just following the evidence, actually, of where this goes.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope to be the village fool. I want to wear the court jester outfit and have people throw tomatoes at me and laugh at me. And it's like better than ever. You know, everything worked out great.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a new golden age, Matt. Don't you know? It's a golden age.
I want to wear the court jester outfit and have people throw tomatoes at me. That's my greatest hope.
All right. In the meantime, how can people follow you on X?
Just Matt_Bracken48. My website is enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. I've written all these many books over the years that people can get, you know.
Doomsday Reef, that's one of your more recent ones, right?
Yeah,
there.
Doomsday Reef is my last full. I wish I was one of these authors that could crank out a book in 6 months, but I just can't. But, you know, we've all got a front stage seat to history. And as long as the power holds out and we can watch TV and the internet, you know, we'll at least be here to say, I told you so, or you were wrong, or I was wrong, and then we'll be around the fire in the oil drum, you know, staying warm and trying to catch animals to eat. I hope I'm wrong. Look, I hope it's all better, and I hope I'm completely wrong.
What if I said I think you're an optimist? Actually, what if I said that? I think there's going to be a lot of available parking in the future, and the highways won't be jammed up.
And I want to know what happened to the bees. Where are the bees? My fruit trees aren't making fruit because there's no bees.
Yeah, the pollinator collapse is another
topic. Where is
another
the bees?
Topic.
What happened to the bees?
Well, that's the neonicotinoid pesticides right there. You know, it's the chemical gasification. I don't know. I mean, we're under an extermination agenda. That's what's clear to me. But we'll save that for a whole nother interview.
I think that that Matt Smith and his friends in Uruguay and Argentina, they might be on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And for one thing that people you don't even think about, just as a final optimistic note, if there's a big global Great Depression, all of our nuclear power plants are based on the concept that, don't worry, the economy will always be fine. We'll always be paying our engineers. Spare parts will always be delivered on time. If there's a big Great Depression, we have hundreds of nuclear power plants that are 90% are in the Northern Hemisphere that could go Chernobyl when the engineers aren't at work.
And there's, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and they can't just be shut off like a light switch.
No.
Right.
And that's another reason to maybe think about, you know, Southern Hemisphere.
All right.
South America could be a good spot.
Well, okay, I've lived there before, and I know you've spent time in.
But I would not rule it out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Matt. Appreciate you today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for everything, and be well. We'll talk again soon.
See you on the internet.
All right. Thank you. There you go, everybody. Matt Bracken. Take his analysis seriously, even if, as he says, he hopes he's wrong, but he's usually right. It turns out. In fact, his books are just foreshadowing things that have come true. He's usually right. So maybe you should plan accordingly. We all should. By the way, if you missed part one of my interview with Matt, that's also available here on brightvideos.com. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm wishing you the best. And get prepared, by the way, if you want to get prepared with food and non-GMO heirloom seeds and so on, shop with us, healthrangerstore.com, long-term storable, freeze-dried, certified organic, lab-tested foods, and many other supplies to help you stay safe through whatever happens. But thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my site here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's a certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as
freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.